Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here. So today we're joined by Hannah Rosenfeld, a senior design director at IDEO, who I've been watching and reading about and use case studies on in my classes at Harvard. So just so was so excited to meet Hannah probably a couple months ago at this point. But she's really at IDEO, which is a world-renowned design and innovation firm. Hannah specializes in designing systems and interventions that shape organizational culture, not through top-down mandates, but through intentional design that fosters behavioral shifts. She brings a unique lens to culture building, grounded in design research, systems thinking, and real-world prototyping. Her work challenges the notion that culture can be dictated. Instead, she shows us how to design the conditions for it to emerge and thrive. There's just so much between what you do, Hannah, and the way I see the world, both through organizational psychology and really what we're doing at Groups. So I've just really, really been looking forward to this conversation. So welcome. And anything you want to add to what I shared about you or anything you want to say here?
Thank you so much, Bobbi. It's a pleasure to be here. I think you did a great job. The only thing I would add is that I'm a design researcher by training and discipline. At IDEO, we have a whole host of multidisciplinary designers, of which organizational designers are a part. And so my perspective is really rooted in how we understand why people do what they do and how we can design with and for those people. So I will bring a deeply design research focused bent to this conversation.
I love it. So the title of this podcast is The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What We Do.
Yep.
So you are a perfect person to have on here.
Yeah, very excited to be here.
So IDEO doesn't believe you can design culture directly, right? We work with so many organizations and I hear leaders talking just like they feel very top down, right? They think they implement these processes and procedures and expect like a culture to emerge. Mm-hmm. You know, why is that? How do you approach shaping it instead? And what does that even mean?
Yeah, well, you said it. At IDEO, we believe that culture, organizational culture among the many instantiations of culture, is an emergent property. And it emerges from the behaviors and mindsets of the people that make up an organization. It intersects with an organization's purpose, but it is this emergent, ineffable property that can't be designed directly. So we think about, when we are working with clients on organizational design projects, we're actually thinking about what is the organizational system that is incubating the current culture. And how can we design that system to output a different kind of culture, a more innovative culture, a more creative culture, a more resilient culture? So we are, as designers, thinking about designing the system. Culture is not what we're designing. Culture is the output. And as with culture more broadly, culture within an organization isn't shaped by one thing. It's multifaceted. And we think about sort of six systemic levers for design when we are working with organizations to drive cultural change. So I'm going to start with a little bit of an academic framework because I think it will provide a good foundation for the rest of the conversation.
Can I ask a quick question, Hannah? What I'm wondering, and I know you are such a huge culture person that this is just like the air you breathe, but like, how do you even think about what culture is? Think about people who just don't even know, care, or explaining this to like a third grader. What would you even say?
Yeah. It's a hard thing to define, right? Mm-hmm. I think.
And I'm putting you on the spot
totally.
Here. This is not.
No, that's fine. So I'll ground it in an example. So, you know, clients will come to us saying, I want to build a more innovative organization. I want the culture to be more innovative, or I want to build a more innovative organization. So then you would think about, what is the culture of innovation, mm-hmm. right? It's collaborative. It's open to failure. Mm-hmm. It is willing to take risk. It is open in that it accepts input from all parts of the organization. And so innovation, you know, being more innovative requires a culture. You know, people need to feel comfortable speaking up. They need to be incentivized to collaborate. This is a big one that I think we'll come back to. And if my end of year performance is going to be based on my successes only, I'm definitely not taking a risk, and I'm not encouraging my team to do so either. So it is, culture is in some ways the sort of social contract of an organization.
Mm-hmm.
What we all agree is success, good behavior. And sometimes that's explicit, right? It's written into policy. A lot of times it's not. A lot of times it is implicit. And it is certainly shaped by explicit things like incentive structures. But it's a little bit fluffy.
Yeah, it's like the fabric.
Yeah.
The way I always think about it, and it's like, or what I say, so I teach a groups and culture class, you know, so it's like everything I do is through the lens of group psychology and team psychology, organizational psychology. And it's like, I think of culture as like the relationships at scale, you know, so you could have a relationship just to take it out of the organizational realm.
Yeah.
You know, my relationship with my partner is going to be different than your relationship with your partner. Mm-hmm. And someone from the outside would describe your relationship with certain adjectives, right? That would be sort of like that the feeling of your, and my relationship would be described with different adjectives. That would be, even if we're doing the same things, it would still feel different. And I think of that within organizations is like, you know, culture is really the relationships at scale. Like we know connection and cohesion, the strength of those relationships dictate all these outcomes, whether you want an innovation, whatever it is, but how well are we getting along and working together? How aligned are we? What's our messaging? And then I think I know you're really good at is actually understanding the variables underneath it to build that strong relationship or that strong culture.
Totally.
You know, and then you've come up with a framework really, which I, you know, cut you off basically,
It's
like you kind of know the things, which I'm always researching and studying, like, so what are the things that create strong work relationships? And then how do we do that at scale?
Totally. And I think that the nuance there is that strong relationships, in the same way you described, will look different. The desired relationships will look different for different organizations, because the relationships, the way people are interacting and working together, dictates what they're outputting. So we talk about six levers that we can design. Can be engineered, if you will. The first is strategy. So this is what a company decides to do, or more importantly, not to do, how aligned that strategy is with their organization's purpose, how clearly articulated that strategy is to people, how well people can understand and activate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear what we're doing. It's not clear how I'm supposed to be supporting it. The next is structure. So this is the nuts and bolts of an organization. This is hierarchy. This is team structure. This is power dynamics and decision-making. This is who is in what rooms and, you know, what kinds of perspectives are included in what parts of the organization. The next is infrastructure. This refers to literally the environments where work happens, both physical and digital. Infrastructure is at the forefront of a lot of conversations around designing return to office or remote or hybrid work, because it's, you know, the conversation around remote work or return to office is forcing organizations and leaders to really reckon with what are the environments that are most conducive to the types of behaviors and outputs that I want my employees to have, and how can we design that intentionally, right? And with a wide aperture for thinking about both flexibility and sort of some non-negotiables about how and where work happens. Process is the next one. So this is literally how information and activities flow through an organization. This is both the systems that an organization uses, the tools, the communication tools, how transparent or not processes are, how complicated or not processes are. Incentives. So we talked a little bit about this one. This one's a big one. Incentives are what motivates employees and leaders to do their work. And we often see clients come to us asking for, you know, I want to build a more innovative organization, and they have misaligned incentives. Our employees are not reviewed or rewarded against innovative metrics, collaboration, failure, things that are required for innovation. So if you have, you're incentivizing people to behave in a certain way, but you're asking that you from a top-down perspective want them to behave a different way, you are setting sort of capable people up to feel incompetent or ineffective. And the last is talent. So who are the people? What are the skills that your organization needs to work in new ways, to do new things? Do you have that skill set? Do you need to train that skill set? Do you need to hire people in? But how do you really think about talent and skills as inputs, necessary inputs, both for the outcomes that you're looking for, but also that emergent culture?
Yeah, I love it. I was just taking some notes because it's like the more, and we were talking about this when we were just chatting at the beginning, that human behavior is human behavior and you can contextualize it. But there's certain things that we know that go into making good groups and good experiences for people. And so it sounds like the framework you put around it is really alignment. So in group psychology babble, if I was building a therapy group, right? Forget about even a team or like therapy group, you'd be like, do I have very clear shared goals? Do people know like why they're here? And is it well articulated? Yep. That is really important, whether it's a family, whether it's a baseball team, whether it's a workplace team, whether it's a big global organization.
Yeah.
Alignment really matters. So is your second one structure, right? Yep. Was it structure?
Yep, structure.
So question. And so for us, from a group, from a psychology lens, we know humans, like we toggle between structure and unstructure. And we were talking about this earlier from a parenting lens. It's important to have structure because we feel safe when there's structure. If it's too, you know, we kind of live as humans between two poles. We need both structure and unstructure. If we're too structured, it's fragile, things break, it's rigid, you can't adapt. If it's too unstructured, it's novel, it's exciting, but it can also be wild and chaotic. So like thinking about the business goals as an example, like what are you trying to achieve here and what is the right place to land between structure and unstructure?
Yeah, I'm going to offer a slight reframe to that lever.
Oh, good.
So structured in this sense doesn't necessarily refer to how structured or unstructured an organization is, but what structure it has. So is it, this is, we often talk about vertical or horizontal groups, right? So is our department siloed? Is inter or cross-functional collaboration possible based on the way teams are structured, right? So it's always possible, but if I work in marketing.
Like more of the layout of the organization kind of?
Exactly.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. And so that has it, you know, structure, how structured or unstructured comes into play, but it is really about the scaffolding of an organization. And if I'm in marketing and I want to collaborate with a commercial team, how easy is that, right? Like I can do it. If I'm really proactive and, you know, really driven, I could make it happen. But if it's not designed for, then it's hard. And, you know, then we have in other examples, there's only cross-functional teams and there isn't, you know, sometimes that's challenging for allowing people to work in depth.
Yeah.
And so we are thinking about, we play with structure. We prototype structure in service of thinking about how different shapes of an organization would make certain things easy and certain things hard.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, really the scaffolding. And then how do you adapt that or flex it to meet the stated goals of whatever your clients are?
Right.
Yeah, so that might actually help me because then I was like, oh, I wonder what's the difference and similarity between structure and infrastructure?
So structure is that sort of the nuts and bolts of an organization, how it's built. Infrastructure
and how you're laying them out.
Yeah. Infrastructure is, you know, both the physical and metaphorical space that a person works in. So, you know, before COVID, it was the office, right? How is the office designed? Is it cubicles or project spaces? Is there open space for collaboration? Are there private spaces for heads down thinking and work? Right? Really thinking about that physical environment.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously, we did think about digital tools before the pandemic, but it is much more prevalent in the conversation now. But if you think about, you know, I co-lead our healthcare portfolio. So I work a lot with our healthcare clients. And for anyone that doesn't work in healthcare, Epic, which is one of the biggest electronic health records, is the infrastructure for a healthcare provider. It dominates workflows. billing codes, if you are trying to design for a provider and to intervene into a provider's workflow, you have to be thinking about Epic. Epic is part of the environment. And Epic allows for certain things and it doesn't allow for other things. And so you could imagine that that analog applying to, do teams use PowerPoint? Are they allowed to use visual design tools like Figma? You know, Excel affords a very specific way of working, right? Cells and tables and defined variables and calculations, whereas Figma or Miro or Mural, these visual workspaces, afford a very different type of working, right? Clustering and grouping and pattern finding at a visual level that is different from pattern finding in Excel. I'm not, you know, we work as designers, we work in both of those tools. I'm not trying to say one is better than the other, but just to illustrate that different spaces afford different ways of working. And if you're not intentional about what spaces you are offering people, then it can be hard to understand why outputs are the way they are, for example.
I love it. You're like helping clarify all this for me. It feels like you're starting with this alignment, this big goal. Then where are the big blocks and how are you laying them out? Mm-hmm. And then within each block, there's the infrastructure and how you're connecting these blocks together, which I think is a lot of what you're talking about. So those two things are very closely related, but different. And then the next one you talked about was process. And yeah. As a clinical psychologist, but we talk about in teams too, in organizational psychology land, is like this idea that in every group and every dynamic, there's the process and there's the content, which I imagine a little bit different than maybe what you're saying, but I'm curious about it. So, but like what we teach our team leaders is that like, you have to be able to categorize what's happening from what's like the feeling, the vibe, the tone, all of that. And then what's the content, which is explicitly being stated. What do we say we're here for? And both are really important and both really shape outcome. So you have to tend to sort of the feeling, the vibe, the all of that, the tone. Mm-hmm. And then the content is really the more explicit named things and what's actually being said.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, like say if I was, and to make it more clear, not for you necessarily, but for people who are listening, like what I'm saying, and then also like the tone, if I was asleep or something, or had my eyes closed or not looking at you, it would be really weird. I'd be saying something, but the process part of it is just not explicit. So you'd have to like name it to be like, how is it mapped? Anyway, but how are you all, how do you think about process? What's similar? What's different? You know?
I definitely think that is a part of what we're talking about here. I think the other piece, aside from just sort of, you know, what you're describing feels like maybe a little bit of a softer version of what we're talking about. It sort of fits into, when we talk about process, we're really talking about order of operations, right? So do I know what the process to do to get something done is? Do I know who I need to talk to in what order? Are there certain systems I need to use? This is the paper trail, right? If you work in healthcare, the steps. And is that clear to me? Mm-hmm. And is it conducive to the type of work that I need to do, right? If it takes 2 weeks and 10 people and 3 systems to spin up market research, I'm probably not going to do very much of it because it's so hard and it takes so much of my time and effort. And if a company is trying to be more human-centered or incubate more human centricity in the organization, you really want to make it easy for people to get out in front of their customers. Mm-hmm. So that's just an example. But how hard or easy does a process make a behavior? How clear is it to me what the process is to do a thing I'm trying to do? And similarly, you know, and sort of maybe more related to what you were talking about, what does it feel like to go through that process?
Yeah.
Do I want to be there? Do I want to do that stuff? Does it feel good or not? And how can, as an organization, how can you make it both as easy as possible and feel as good as possible for people to do the things you want them to be doing more of?
Yeah, it's making me think of like your first one, which is alignment. You know, we think a lot about, and like, think, you know, I think when I was first sort of, or like reflecting back, alignment is like a really high level, the shared goals, the mission, the vision, values, all of that. But when there's alignment between even these micro things or processes, or, you know, from health psychology, we always think about health and wellness as alignment between what you're feeling, thinking, feeling, saying, and doing. Yeah. And that just makes things easier when there's that alignment, you're more in flow.
Yeah.
It's not always possible, but when you can create alignment, and this probably leads to your next topic, which is talent, right? An alignment between someone's purpose or their drives or what makes them feel good, and then the jobs that they're doing, that can make, you know, that can just make things like easier. Oh no, we're actually skipping over incentives. So yeah, incentives, like how do you define or think about that?
So incentives are a big one. And incentives, of course, there's monetary incentives. That's, you know, a big thing. Compensation is a thing we talk about here, but also how people are recognized and rewarded in all sorts of ways within an organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, monetary compensation is very clear. Like, what are mm-hmm. we monetarily rewarding someone for doing? The other stuff is a little fuzzier, right? Uh-huh. And so it can be hard to suss out what the incentive structure is for certain behavior. But an example that I referenced earlier is, I think collaboration is a good one to mm-hmm. think about, which is an organization may say, we want to encourage more collaboration. We want people to be collaborating more. But if at the end of the year, my performance metrics are all individual
mm-hmm.
and I feel pressure to meet my individual metrics, I am not investing in collaborative activities. Or when I am investing in collaborative activities, I'm really concerned about getting credit, because mm-hmm. credit, individual credit, is what I am incentivized to get.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see how then you want someone to be more collaborative, but if they're getting evaluated not against collaboration, you can imagine the same thing for, we want our people to feel more confident taking risks, right? But if you want someone to take risks, they're going to fail. And so failure failure tolerance needs to be built into the way people are evaluated. And that takes a whole different skill set, right? What are the metrics of good failure? What does it mean to fail well?
Mm-hmm.
That's different than, did you meet your revenue target, or are you operating efficiently? And so there is both the sort of structure, incentive structure has to be looked at, but also what are the metrics that you're measuring against that make it clear to someone what they're being evaluated against? And so then they can calibrate what behavior to take accordingly. And they're doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to make sure that they're taking behaviors that are desirable for the organization, because people are going to do what they are incentivized to do, whether mm-hmm. you've thoughtfully designed that incentive structure or not.
I love that. It's like setting up the systems to reinforce the behaviors that you really, you know, want to see.
Totally.
And then making sure that you're basically reinforcing, creating an environment where those behaviors are incentivized. How do you think about, I just know one of the other class I teach is motivation. So what drives behavior in the workplace, mm-hmm. knowing that a lot of the behavioral reinforcers, right? Like, so if you do more and I give you more money, great. That's like one way, mm-hmm. but it sort of has a ceiling, and that there's other things that incentivize people, like purpose, autonomy, mastery, all these other things. How do you sort of like pull that in here? Or not, I don't know, you know, like the sort of the intrinsic motivation part of it versus the kind of behavioral reinforcement.
Totally. It's definitely a part of this. And I think at the macro level, I think it comes back to that alignment question, right? Mm-hmm. How aligned can I make the connection between what mm-hmm. I am doing every day and what organizational success, whatever mm-hmm. that means. One thing that happens if a strategy is poorly defined is people feel like are running around like chickens with their head cut off, right? They're doing stuff. They're not totally sure why they're doing it. They're not totally sure how it aligns to this larger organizational mission or purpose. And that is not fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about, you know, we think about what does fulfilling work look like for someone? Part of it is I need to make sure that I can connect what I'm doing with what the organization is doing. And I can see myself reflected in that success.
Mm-hmm.
Another piece of it is that the truth that people are motivated differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does it look like to build leaders that are empathetic, and deep listeners and able to understand what matters to their individual employees and then map that to organizational priorities, right? So if you can find a synergy between an individual's purpose, their goals, and organizational priorities, right? Not only are you setting the organization up for success because you've got a bunch of champions of your purpose, but you're also helping defining for each person what motivation looks like. And whether that's giving them a project that they really want to work on, thinking about flexibility, right? Like autonomy and flexibility in the realm both of return to office, but also just, you know, someone that wants to own something from start to finish. Can you find a project for them to do that they can really sign? So I think part of it is alignment. Part of it is leadership capability building to sort of understand the unique, what is uniquely motivating to each person. And then think about what are the policies that you can design to incentivize, to institutionalize that incentive, right? So part of it is compensation policies, you know, vacation policies, flexible work policies. And that is at an organizational level, the output of sort of like strategic alignment and deep understanding of people. Then you've sort of deeply listened to your employees. You understand what they want and need, and then you can offer it as a, this is our company-wide policy, right? It's really informed by the unique nature of your work, the outcomes you're after, and the people that make up your organization.
Yeah, there's so much there. Like you can, that's like what a high performing organization is, totally. Right? When that organization becomes a vehicle for the person to make an impact or drive purpose or something. And that's for us, we end up teaching leaders. So like our how-to of like actually doing that is teaching leaders how to coach.
Yeah.
We're teaching them to think like a therapist. That's our like, so we started off just doing groups for teams, which is like helping teams improve connection, cohesion, build strong culture, all the things we're talking about through a very similar kind of process, but just more through a psych lens. But then we got sort of asked like, can you help our leaders do this? You know, like, can you do like a train the trainer model basically. And we're like, sure. And it's basically teaching them coaching. Like a lot of the training we teach like therapists, coaches, how do you draw people out? How do you ask good questions? How do you put a frame around it? How do you come up with a plan? Where do you look for that alignment between what they really care about and what the organization really needs? You know, and that's really good question asking and reflecting back and summarizing. In my motivation class, we teach motivational interviewing. It's not interviewing at all. It's a coaching approach.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like doing that thing to help leaders do this themselves.
Yeah. Well, and what you just said about, you know, the hallmark of a healthy organization or a high performing organization is that it becomes the vehicle for people to fulfill their purpose. The opposite is also true, which is a poorly designed organization, just like poorly designed anything, makes really smart, capable people feel really incompetent.
Oh, yeah.
And ineffective. If, you know, anyone that's tried to put together a complicated thing with poorly crafted instructions knows that you can quickly feel super dumb.
Yeah. And miserable. Like, so I'm a health psychologist by training. It's like, for me, it's really about making the world better through creating healthier organizations.
Yes.
Because, like, the relationships in our life dictate everything, how long we live, how well we live, how well we perform, and we spend most of our time at work, right? So if you have a crappy organization that like is not setting you up and you're feeling miserable a chunk of the day, which a lot of us are feeling right now because the data is showing us this, organizations aren't getting it right, unfortunately.
People aren't productive. People are burned out. People leave.
Yeah, they come home grumpy. It's like the whole thing.
Totally.
And the last one, because I can't leave it hanging, is talent. So this is really, you know, the people part of this, right? Yeah. And how do you think about this?
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes, you know, IDEO is an innovation consultancy. So we work with companies of all sorts to design new things. Sometimes the things that we design require whole new ways of working, right? We're partnering with audacious leaders and ambitious organizations to build the future. And it is not infrequent that a new thing, a new product, service, experience, offering requires a skill set that either doesn't exist within an organization or exists in pockets, but isn't sort of well represented in a team that needs to bring something to market. So that's a very clear example of you're trying to do a new thing, bring a new thing to market. You might need software engineers. You might need industrial designers. You might need marketing people. You might need a new skill set to bring a thing to market. The same is true if you're trying to change the way an organization operates. You might need to structure your organization differently and bring skills from centrally organized functions distributed across a team, right? So we see that a lot in research functions. Research functions are often a central organization, a central organization function. And if you want a team to be learning quickly, iterating rapidly, operating more innovatively, sometimes it makes sense to bring the research capability into a team so that you're not having to tap a central function, for example. And so that's when an organization has a skill set. It's just organized in a way that's not effective or not conducive to the outcomes the organization is trying to drive. So how can we bring that skill set? How can we bring that skill set to show up in different parts of the organization? Sometimes it's, we need new skills. We're trying to do a thing that we've never done before or operate in a way that we've never done. We need to either upskill our people in a new set of skills or hire in a new set of folks. And, you know, you mentioned this a few moments ago, but sort of alignment starts with alignment and then it moves into sort of what are the enablers of that behavior, right? Infrastructure, process, structure, incentives, and then who's doing that work? Do we have the people to do it? And so that's the sort of last bit of it is who do we need to be doing the work? Do we have them in the organization? How do we activate them appropriately? Or where do we find them if we don't?
Yeah, I'm just like hearing like resonance of all the things you've talked about even so far, even like the alignment. But we will work with companies who often are growing really fast and they're churning, you know, because they're growing and they're not focused on keeping their people together for a whole bunch of different reasons. Not because they don't care, very well intentioned caring leaders, but they're just trying to keep up with this pace. And the alignment between who you're bringing in, both from a culture fit and a values thing, and also like a skill set match,
yeah,
is often like the first thing that really needs to happen. And the other thing you said that really I see all the time too is like, I forget who said this, but I repeat it all the time. I might have just been like a student in class, but it's like culture can become like the worst behavior you tolerate, you know, and it sort of like explodes when you don't actually acknowledge if you're not hiring the right person or you're not kind of, you know, clear on who you are as an organization with your values and all this. And then there's some behaviors that are they're popping up that nobody's interjecting. That can really kind of like take all of those sideways.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah. I could just pick your brain for like ever. And we're literally on like question number one. But what if I, and we're, you know, probably should get ready to wrap up in a minute, but what if I not asked you or what would you really want to share that'd be important? Knowing that everyone who's listening cares deeply about these types of
things. Yeah.
You know, you have a lot of information, a lot of wisdom. You're doing the work. You have like this very clear way of operationalizing this.
Yeah.
Like, what if I not asked you that you think would be helpful?
I don't know if it's something you haven't asked me, but I think that the message I want to send is that organizational change is hard. It is messy. It takes a long time. It is full of friction. If it feels hard for leaders listening, it's because it is. But the intention when we work with clients to do organizational change work is not to change culture or change an organization in one fell swoop. In fact, trying to do so would be a fool's errand because sustained change needs champions and champions are built over time. So change is hard. It takes a long time. It should. But the good news is that, you know, using the sort of six levers we just talked about, you can prototype at those levers. At that level, organizational change. Just like we prototype products and services, we prototype organizational change as well. And we're often playing with those levers, right? Whether it's prototyping a new ambient information display system for the Women's Imaging Center of a hospital system so that they can better communicate to anxious patients, or building in a new psychographic segmentation tool into an Epic workflow for an ambulatory surgery center that is trying to get their providers who are trained to provide consistent care to actually provide intentionally inconsistent care by delivering information and communicating to people differently depending on how they want to receive information. You can prototype interventions that have lasting ripple effects through an organization because they enable different behaviors or they give people new information. And with new information, they can do better things. They can do different things. They can operate more effectively. So the same iterative prototyping approach that can be applied to any design problem can be applied to an organization, which I hope is inspiring and makes organizational change feel more accessible than, oh my gosh, AI is coming. I've got to figure out how to change my entire organization to be more future fit and competitive. It doesn't have to feel overwhelming like that, even though it is hard. And it's hard. It's just hard.
Well, I just appreciate this, the way you talk about this and the way you've taken this like kind of big problem and then broke it down in these steps that allows people to look at these different dimensions and kind of play around, mm-hmm. you know, and really think about like, what am I trying to go after here? Here are some core variables that go into creating kind of different situations, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to play. Is it better? Is it worse? I don't know. Yeah. But it's like kind of playing with these different things, but you give a structure that people actually can use. And I always say to students and actually like people are working with you, I'm like, psychology is not, I say this about psychology. Psychology is not rocket science. It's everywhere. There's a structure in play around how humans need to kind of operate and you contextualize it. But when you can understand the structure and see the frame, you can actually interject and try different kind of inputs to get different outputs.
Yeah.
And I feel like you've done this very clearly through sort of an IDEO framework that allows people to sort of grab on to be like, okay, I get that. Like mm-hmm. I can play with this and, mm-hmm. you know, ask some questions and unpack this a little bit and see what happens when I yeah. like play with these different levers.
Yeah.
Well, I just so appreciate you coming. I just wish we had like 3 more hours because I just want to actually, do you all have, I know, you know, you have, the HBR article that we were going to talk about, sort of
yep.
mandate. So that's like a great resource. Mm-hmm. But you know, is there like an IDEO book or anything like that out there?
So there is a book that was published by some of our founders called Change by Design. Mm-hmm. It's about this. What does it mm-hmm. mean to design change? There's some great examples, stories, case studies in there. Oh, we also have, IDEO has a blog where we post public case studies, stories of our work, thought pieces relating to all things design, of which organizational design is a big part. So that's also a really good place to look for inspiration or ideas.
Oh, amazing. Well, you are incredible, Hannah. I appreciate you spending some time with me.
It was a pleasure.
And hope to see you around Boston soon when we're together.
It would be a delight. Thanks, Bobby.